Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of November 22nd, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very, very well. And we're also pleased to be rejoined by our other co-host, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well. Very well. You should all know that Mariah has lovely earrings on, and I can see them in the little Skype camera here. So if you hear any clinking in her speaker, it's because her earphones are touching her microphone. Earrings are touching the microphone. Anyway, we had so guys, this week, just recently, the climate conference over in Bonn, Germany, which everyone's heard us talk about as the Conference of the Parties, COP number 23, COP23, ended up. And it was the first real climate conference of the parties that happened under the administration of our 45th president. And a bunch of stuff happened. I've got a list of things that I think happened here, but I want to ask either of you two guys if you have a summary of the points you think that because the COP23 in Bonn got essentially zero coverage, right, in the press, what do you think people ought to know about what went on there? Let me see. I'm going to flip a coin and go to DR. I'm going to ask you first. What do you think were the issues that you'd want people to know about?
Well, two takeaways. I think that, first of all, when you talk about the lack of media coverage, we got to give a shout out to Amy Goodman of Democracy Now, who did tremendous work in terms of her coverage of it and doing the job that seemingly the rest of the mainstream media wouldn't. But the other main takeaway, at least from some of the coverage that I've seen, is the overall sense from the conference that in Bonn, Germany, that the attendees were essentially saying auf Wiedersehen to the United States in terms of basically concluding that they are going to move forward even despite all the sort of chicanery that the United States is involved in, that essentially that the other countries are saying that if we take the lead, we can advance clean energy. We can move towards the goal of reducing pollution, regardless of what the United States does. The United States is sort of an unreliable partner anyway. Right, so, right, you know, right. Just basically send them on their way and we'll get going.
Right. Okay. Yep.
And, you know, along those lines, and I've said this, I think, in prior podcasts, but really by pulling out of the accord, essentially the United States has lost its ability to advocate for any of its rights on the global scene, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we no longer, I mean, especially when we show up and what we did at the COP23 is we showed up and talked about the, you know, wonderful things that coal can do for the world, which is somebody compared that to going to a conference on cancer and talking about the, you know, joys of smoking. I forget who said that, but so, you know, we're really missing out on a chance to help shape the direction that the world is going by not showing up and representing. Yep. I mean, we showed up, but yeah.
But we didn't represent.
Metaphorically showing up, yeah.
Well, I read an article that talked about basically made, I guess it was five points, which I will summarize clumsily for the listening audience. But one point they were making is that there were essentially two delegations from the United States. There was the delegation that came from Washington, D.C., talking about, as Mariah said, the just how wonderful clean coal is and nuclear power and all the great stuff that you can get with that. And there was a different delegation that was basically representing subnational units. This is the new buzzword we're going to use, right? States, nonprofit NGOs, states and cities. So there were a lot of other Americans there, basically under the hashtag we're still in, I think is a pound hashtag we're still in, saying that the United States is still committed and making the case that commitments from states and localities now represent a significant portion of the original United States commitment, right? Which, of course, all the commitments are weaker than they should be, blah, blah, blah. But it's not as if once you step below the federal government that you that there's nothing going on, is that there's lots of people pushing. So that's one thing. Second thing, it turns out there's something called the Ministerial for Climate Action, which is some sort of high-level organization comprised of China, the EU, and India or something, which basically is now calling the shots. I mean, the biggest countries. And guess who's not in that Ministerial on Climate Action? The United States has been left out, which basically means that China gets to, since they're the 200-pound elephant in the world now, they get to call the shots, which is interesting. Another thing that came out of the conference was that at least in principle, there were something like 20 countries or so that promised to phase out the use of coal, right? Which is just even it's like the beginning of a movement. When these people are promising they're going to get rid of coal, that's a good trend in the right direction, and it's a new thing. The other two interesting things that came out of the meeting were kind of inside baseball geeky stuff. But as everyone knows, that there are these promises that countries made to reduce their carbon dioxide emissions by a certain amount, you know, by a certain date, all these very arcane things. But most of those promises actually begin in the year 2020 and extend to the year 2030. So it turns out that there's some discord about how much countries like the United States are or are not reducing emissions prior to 2020. And there was some back and forth about that. And finally, there it turns out that next year there's going to be a yet one more meeting where everyone is expected to come in and describe the efforts they've made to reduce their carbon pollution and begin the process of actually documenting how much they've done in terms of reducing their carbon emissions. And that, again, was a bit of a controversy about how that should proceed. So, long and short of it, COP23 is closed. It's continued to put the meat on the bones of the Paris Accord as to how the Paris Accord will actually be executed. The United States was absent officially, but very much there in spirit in trying to push the fact that the United States wants to get back in and be part of the show. And all around, you say, there you go, Conference of the Parties number 23. And we'll have to look around and be Conference of the Party 24. I don't know. Do you know where it's going to be, either of you guys?
No. Poland.
It's going to be Poland?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll see you there next November, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, in the Earth Negotiations Bulletin actually puts out a nice summary from the proceedings, which we can maybe link to the blog or whatever, but it has a, you know, it gives everybody's statements. And I think one thing that was interesting is that in the opening statement, the United States recalled our country's decision to withdraw, but this in the opening statements, I don't know who actually was giving these statements, but anyways, the United States stressed our intent to continue engagement with it. You know, so that's a good sign. But also notably in those opening statements, Dominica sort of called us out and said it regretted our exit. I mean, they didn't specifically say our exit. They said the exit of an annex one party, which since we're the only ones not in the agreement, it's obviously us, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a nice summary with a lot of good information there.
Let's hope by the time the next Conference of the Parties comes around, we've impeached everyone right down to Nancy Pelosi so she can be president and put us back into the Paris Accord. Okay, so anyway, part of all the effort in Bonn, as we said, there were essentially two delegations from the United States, one at the federal level, the other an unofficial one at the state and local city level. But in conjunction with that, there was one very important turn of events this past week that happened in the state of Virginia. And before we get too jargony, let me just remind everyone that the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, the acronym is RGGI, Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and it goes by REGGIE because it's much easier to pronounce. REGGIE is basically a cap and trade organization that comprises most of New England, New York State, and I think Maryland. So there's a bunch of states in the Northeast that, and what they do is they trade permission to pollute in the generation of electricity, and that's a way to cap the carbon emissions. So having said that, what Reggie is, I'm going to throw the ball over to DR to tell us what happened in the state of Virginia this past week that's good news for climate hawks.
Well, regulators in Virginia have begun the first steps of putting the state into the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. This was something that was a commitment by the governor-elect Ralph Northam to go into Reggie in the event that he was elected. This was also a goal of the outgoing governor Terry McAuliffe. And the reason why I mentioned Northam and McAuliffe is that, as we learned from what happened in New Jersey with Chris Christie several years ago, this sort of thing is dependent upon politics because, you know, in Virginia, governors only have one term. Constitutionally, they only have one term.
Really? Huh.
So if in 2021 a denier is elected, we could see this sort of climate hokey pokey that we see on a federal level, on a state level here, where a governor pulls out, and then presumably if it's a governor of a different party in 2025, they go back in, becomes a rather frustrating situation, because obviously, you know, ecology and politics are two different things. So it's going to be interesting to see.
But just to interrupt you, you're way downstream now, right? I mean, you're talking 2022 that somebody might pull out, right? Whereas Virginia's headed in, right?
Obviously, you know, in terms of emissions, we always have to think long term.
Yes, true that.
This is the sort of the frustrating problem is that, you know, unlike, you know, there are certain states where you do seem to have a bipartisan commitment this idea, which was created on a bipartisan basis. Right. Let's not forget. But in other states, not so much. So that's why people in Virginia and climate hawks in Virginia and elsewhere have to pay very, very close attention well into the 2020s to see if Virginia remains committed to Reggie.
Okay, I take your point.
I'm going to be optimistic and say that I hope Republican states start to realize the economic benefits of moving toward renewable energy, and so they will no longer have this hokey pokey issue. I'm gonna root for that.
You're going positive, and I think that if Virginia joins Reggie, what it does is it makes the market bigger, right? Which is a good thing. Includes more and more of the United States in this regional greenhouse gas initiative, because there's a parallel system out on the West Coast, which I think encompasses California, Oregon, and Washington. You know, and so this stuff is happening, and word has it that since prisoner Chris Christie, I keep thinking of him in that press conference staring out beside the Trumpster last year, but Chris Christie is out of New Jersey, right? And the governor there is likely to try and bring New Jersey back in, you know, according to that hokey pokey that you talked about. But if Virginia and New Jersey rejoin, that gives a lot more economic inertia to the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is a good thing. So I'm cheering. I'm with Mariah. I'm happy and optimistic, dear. I'm not on your side with this sort of Cassandra-like thing.
even here in Massachusetts, remember, we had a bit of this hokey pokey, because right before former Governor Mitt Romney left office about a year before, he decided not to join, and then we were out, and then subsequently Governor Deval Patrick put us back in. We've so far been able to avoid that sort of hokey pokey, but it obviously doesn't preclude what might happen in other states.
Baker, of course, is moving forward with a lot of initiatives here in Massachusetts now, and of course he's part of, you know, Reggie and everything else, but didn't he sort of have to be nudged in that direction?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So, when he first...
Yeah.
I was going to say, when he first ran for governor, he was making it clear that he was going to pull out. When he ran the governor for a second time, realizing that strategy didn't work successfully politically the first time, he changed course and said he was going to stay in.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I remember, you know, Deval Patrick, those of you too young to remember, Deval Patrick ran in 2008-09, right? And one of his selling points was his greenness, right? He had little wind turbines on his website, and I mean, it helped him win. And I think that it'd be interesting in New Jersey and Virginia, if it becomes an issue, you know, I think it would help the guy that would, the candidate that is intending to stay in Reggie. But we'll see. We'll see. I think we'll keep an eye on that. But for the time being, we'll be very happy that Virginia is looking to rejoin Reggie. There's something else to be happy about. Something else to be very happy about, because it connects to the color of money, right? Mariah, can I do put you on the spot to talk about what the levelized cost of energy is, kind of thing?
Well, I have to say, I mean, you said something else to be happy about, and I immediately went to the Tesla trucks.
Oh, well, we're going to get there. We're going to get there, trust me.
I'm just so excited about that. So yeah, no, the levelized energy, I don't know quite what it is that you're talking about.
Well, it turns out that in Joe Rahm in the in Think Progress, all right, has he put up a thing. So there's this method of evaluating the cost of energy, and it's the levelized cost of energy is what they call it. It basically computes
LCOE, right.
Hmm?
The LCOE, right?
Yes. And it computes the cost of energy over the entire life cycle of of some sort of energy installation. So to say, over the 50 years that a nuclear power plant is in place, you know, you take up all the costs, and then you take up all the energy produced, and you divide one by the other, and you get a cost per kilowatt hour, right? And that calculation is now saying that in many places, in quotation marks, which mean many places here in the United States, it's cheaper to put up a solar panel than it is to build a natural gas plant, which is an astounding kind of claim, right? Because it means that renewable energy is competitive with these other sources of energy, which
cheaper.
Is great.
It's not even just competitive. It's actually better. So the numbers I saw were that it was it's about 5 cents per kilowatt hour for solar and 4.5 cents per kilowatt hour for wind,
which
by comparison, the average price for electricity from fossil fuels is 11 cents per kilowatt hour. And nuclear energy is actually 14.8 cents per kilowatt hour. So you know, solar and wind are far outpacing. The
old forms, yeah. I
mean, yes, and even better is that it's not so to run. It's the cost of wind and solar has become so low that actually, what this article said is that building the infrastructure, they've included that in the cost estimates, and building the infrastructure, and then running it is still cheaper than just running fossil fuels, and that's huge because. That essentially means that one for developing nations, it's makes it a lot more accessible to just start putting in, solar and wind. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's still not totally accessible, but the demand from the United States and from China and from, a lot of countries is helping drop those prices so that it's more accessible for all. But it also means that, you know, there's no really argument about, well, you know, it's too expensive to put in all this new infrastructure. Like, actually, no, it's cheaper to put in the infrastructure and run it than it is to just run fossil fuels, and it will create new jobs.
So there, that's a good news story, right? That's a good thing to say. So I guess we can leave it there. I'm looking, we get 18 minutes of scintillating, brilliant conversation. Hopefully, help people see the world differently. But we have to stop now. Believe it or not, let me check. And what we'll do is we will go back and try and dig up some of the references that we've made in our conversation and put them on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can, if you want, you can go to the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can like the Facebook page if you want, and you can click through to find. The SoundCloud link for the podcast. So there you go. You can listen to us, of course, in other ways on your smartphone using all the usual things like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. And, of course, we are hiding deep in the bowels of iTunes. If you are searching for Massachusetts Climate Action, you will be able to find us. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and finally, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Mariah, thank. Great to have you back.
I'm happy to be back.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.